Shalom and welcome again to another edition of Seekers of Meaning, the podcast of Jewish Sacred Aging. I'm your host, Rabbi Richard Adress. These podcasts are presented to help explore the impact of the longevity revolution on our congregations and our community. And we invite you to visit our website, jewishsacredaging.com, and the Jewish Sacred Aging Facebook page. We also encourage your comments and suggestions to me, Rabbi Adress, at jewishsacredaging.com. And you can leave a voicemail message for us on the homepage website, jewishsacredaging.com. The explosion and expansion of the baby boom generation and its impact upon the Jewish community is being monitored. And one of the major institutions that do this is B3. And we're very, very proud to welcome to the Seekers of Meaning podcast today, Stuart Himmelfarb, the co-founder of B3 and the senior fellow of faith-based civic engagement for the Wagner School of Public Service at New York University. Stuart, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Richard. Happy to be here.
Thank you for joining us. Hope well, things are well in New York today and quiet and nobody's
right
going too crazy. B3 platform. Give us an idea of what this is, how you got involved, how it started, and what do you hope to do with it?
B3 stands for Boomers. B for Boomers, 3 for Third Chapter, the Jewish Boomer Platform. So we came to that name because our focus is specifically on engaging baby boomers in Jewish life. And 3 is generally for the third chapter. We have this period in between midlife career and child rearing and mortgages on one hand, and whatever retirement ends up being on the other. In between, there is a roughly 20-year period of great opportunity, and that period is unprecedented. I came upon this idea with Dr. David Elcott, who is my business partner in B3 and co-founder. And he's someone I actually studied with way back when he was with Klal, and I was a volunteer at UJA Federation in New York. And we reconnected about 10 years ago when we were talking about the Jewish community, and we realized that there is this incredibly great opportunity for engaging or re-engaging boomers that as they go into this period I just described of these 20 years of opportunities, we wondered whether the Jewish community was really ready. David did some research at NYU in the late, let's say, 2009, and it had to do with encore careers in public service and whether Jewish boomers would be interested. And one of the findings in that study was that about 60% of the Jewish boomer responders said if they didn't find the resources and positions that they needed in the Jewish community, they would go elsewhere. And that word elsewhere was an operative term for me. As I read that, I said, we face an opportunity in terms of strengthening Jewish life. We can either be a resource for Jewish boomers as they chart their path into this unprecedented period, or we can watch this opportunity dissipate as they go elsewhere. So David and I decided to create B3. We are a 501c3 nonprofit incorporated in New York, and we're housed at the Robert F. Wagner Graduate School of Public Service. The goal we have, the mission we have is clear, and it is to engage or re-engage baby boomers in Jewish life, and to do so with attention to intergenerational connections. Richard, during the course of this conversation, we can unpack what that means, but pretty clearly, right at the beginning where we say engage or re-engage, that reflects our sense of understanding the larger landscape in which Jews, whether boomers or not, are making decisions about whether to connect or not. And this is a case where those who are in don't necessarily stay in, and those who are out don't necessarily stay out. It's such a dynamic landscape, one that presents great opportunities, but of course, also great challenges because of that notion of elsewhere. So we decided that we would offer our insights and services to the Jewish community to ensure that we have a dog in this race as well, that we offer and create resources and opportunities for baby boomers as they think about their path forward. So that's how we kicked it off.
This, and certainly in I'm on the road regularly in congregations and organizations, you know, for Jewish Sacred Aging, this idea of not only elsewhere, but this fluidity of movement. Have you tracked what I'll call fluidity, and the fact that our generation is very content to move from institution to institution, searching for meaning, purpose, programming, connection, community, and is not necessarily, as perhaps in previous generations, content to just stay in one place?
Yes, that's really been one of our central issues as we've tried to capture this fluidity, this kind of lack of ongoing connection, replacing that kind of connecting that was a thing of the past with much more episodic engagement. So our sources range from our own national research. We did a national study about 5 years ago, and we hope to update that shortly, that included responses from 12,500 adult Jews. We didn't just look at boomers, by the way, because we, as our mission implies, we look at boomers in the context of the other three adult cohorts, meaning millennials, Gen X, and the greatest or World War II generation. So the way we look at this is also based on extensive reading, other research, other projects that we've done around the country, where we're constantly looking at what people are doing, how they make decisions, what to do with their time. The metaphor that I developed that I think captures this situation is that we used to be in basically equivalent to a prefix menu at a restaurant, and that's where you pay a flat fee and you get limited choices. In many cases, the membership options at organizations, synagogues, JCCs, and elsewhere, not just in the Jewish community, would be just like that. However, most people would think that that would then convert into an a la carte arrangement. What I think has actually happened is we're in a period of tapas. Those are small plates, and people now are looking to graze among small plates, small offerings, temporary connections. And this is all facilitated by social media and other internet resources, where people can find something they're interested in, can go and do it, and they no longer need intermediaries or institutions to serve as a conduit for the invitation or connection. That's an opportunity for broader engagement, but it also, as you can imagine, comes with some risks, as many of our institutions are really focused on the older model of long-term connections and membership itself. Membership as a concept is something we need to grapple with, because it's no longer the standard way that people approach their connections. If we accept that we're in a period of episodic engagement, then membership is on the other end of the spectrum from that. And we need to think about how we define success. And that means if we define success by how many new members we get from a program or an initiative, we might be disappointed. However, if we define success based on participation and then repeat participation, that means the second date, not just the blind date, then if we look at it that way, I think we're going to have a fairer representation of how we're connecting with people. So for us, it's a really important part of our work is to try to get people to recalibrate how they look at their audience, how they invite people in. We understand that many organizations, whether it's synagogues or JCCs or others, look at membership as the cornerstone of their model. It just might be, though, that for many people, that's just not the way they approach things. One quick example from the secular world is the Steppenwolf Theater Company, which did some research about 8 or so years ago, where they discovered that the sweet spot for their fundraising, which was subscribers for multi-show packages, that group was shrinking. And when they looked into it, people told them, well, I don't want to make a commitment for three shows. I'd rather decide one by one. And they realized that they had been treating the single ticket purchasers as second class. And they turned it around and they started offering extra bonus services, even to the one-time attendees. If you go through that particular survey and you replace it with Synagogue or with a JCC, that research report reads very clearly and resonates in terms of the situation we're in terms of the way people are approaching their connections. So you might have noticed in that whole description, Richard, I didn't really mention baby boomers. I mentioned membership. I mentioned the larger landscape, whether media or cultural, that we're dealing with. And that's because we look at the Jewish community as an intergenerational and multi-generational group. So when we look at boomers as a group that we believe needs added attention and programming, we're quick to point out that some of the issues that we address with boomers are not unique to that cohort, but rather are affecting all of the cohorts of adult Jews. And when we did our research across those cohorts, we saw a continuum of behaviors. So one last thing to mention, we looked at volunteering. It's a really big and popular activity right now. It's a great way to engage people. And we saw solid interest in volunteering among all four cohorts. And it's important to say it's not just that we look at boomers and that some of these attributes are not just true for boomers. We need to look across all four of those cohorts to make sure we're doing the best we can.
But it sounds also like as the baby boom generation was so pivotal in the cultural restructuring of much of American culture in the last 50 years, that their embrace of this tapas or, let's say, bite-sized Judaism, which is now being replicated throughout the generations, especially from what I'm understanding in my reading with millennials, again, they've sort of like set the stage for what may be coming. So one of my questions to you is then, given this reality of the tapas Judaism, which is a pretty cool image, and I think strikes home, and we alluded to this earlier, what's the impact, in your opinion, and the B3 research of technology on this?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, it really is facilitating this kind of fluidity or episodic engagement. Right now, if someone said, they might say to their teenage or college age son, you know, tikkun olam, repairing the world, social action is very big value in Jewish life. I think you and I ought to go and get involved in some kind of activity, maybe to help the environment. So what they do is they go onto a website like idealist.org, and they put in their zip code and they find that there's a cleanup at the environmental center across town. They go and they do it. They have a great time together. In fact, they go back three consecutive weekends. They have this great father-son connection and enjoy this a lot. By the third week, they kind of look at each other and say, gee, that's been great. I think we've had enough. And they're done. So what happens as a result of that web-driven connection? What happens is the father and the son have a great bonding experience. The father feels good about having conveyed a deep Jewish value, not just by talking about it, but actively doing it. The son has a nice memory about something great he did with his father. Who's left out of that equation is the synagogue social action committee or the Federation volunteer group. They're no longer essential to the linkage between the individual family and the volunteer activity. In fact, just as a quick digression, we actually highly urge organizations to work to create volunteer centers in their communities. Federations should be the conveners of this kind of an activity to get more volunteer opportunities, significant and substantial volunteer opportunities in one place, and to then do marketing and other kinds of outreach to encourage people to look there for their volunteer activities. Synagogue social action committees wondering about, you know, where the activities are. It would be helpful to know that on the other side of the county, there's a great need, and we can act as a Jewish community communally as an endeavor we share expressing a Jewish value. Without that kind of endeavor, instead we have these one-offs that people do. I would never say they're not meaningful. They are meaningful. But as you can see, the benefits to Jewish community don't necessarily follow. So that's a way that just one little parable about how technology might be affecting things. The other thing that is happening with technology is just we become more distant and less physically, you know, in the same place. And I know at my synagogue, there are people around the world tuning in to the high holiday services when they're being streamed. That's terrific. But I have to tell you, maybe I'm old fashioned this way. There's something about being shoulder to shoulder in one room and getting a sense of the vibrancy and the joy of worshiping together. And you know that in Jewish life, it is community that is critical to our future. And if those bonds become virtual rather than real, I think we may be losing something. You know, in the 2013 Pew study, they had a question about the essential components in respondents' minds of what it is to be of Judaism, actually, they said. And being part of a Jewish community was 28%, way down the list. And that really concerned David and me when we looked at that and we said, you know, we need to be sure that as we address boomer engagement, that we do it in the context of larger community engagement, because that's where we need to strengthen Jewish life in the face of the impact of new technologies. Actually, I want to mention one other thing in this context, Richard, and that is where do boomers fit among these cohorts? When we look at the challenge of engaging boomers in Jewish life at this point when they are cycling out of or have recently left their midlife careers, this is the first time we've really had this 20-year period. And it's our strong belief that if we can crack the code for boomers who are already, you know, users of new technologies, if we can crack the code for them, then it may be helpful in our ability as a Jewish community to engage the succeeding generations, Xers and millennials and so on, in Jewish life as they approach those new milestones and life stages. So in this environment of technological advancement and social media, we do think that specific attention to boomer engagement is an important test site for the way we connect to Jewish life in the future.
Yeah, well, once again, using that image, the boomer generation may be the pathfinder for successive generations, given that we're the first test case generation in the Jewish community to really have these options, opportunities, and longevity to test it out. And, right. And so that's why this is why Jewish Sacred Aging is around and B3 and a bunch of other things that are really saying this is in many ways, as you alluded to, it's uncharted territory.
Right. One of the interesting quotes we came across, Mary Catherine Bateson, an anthropologist, said, with extended longevity, most people think that 20 years has been added to the end of our lives. But it turns out, she says, and I believe she's right, those 20 years have been added to the middle. So this is what we're looking at now. I want to make a very important cautionary note, and that is when we talk about engaging boomers at this point in their lives, we're not saying that there aren't programs in the Jewish community that address the issues and the challenges of aging. We are blessed with Homes for the Aged, Family Services, JCCs, synagogues that have long been addressing the challenges of illness, of economic bumps in the road, the kinds of things that the Jewish community has been addressing over the years. And we can just look at the list of agencies in our communities and we can be proud of that. We're actually talking in most cases about what we call the upside of aging. And that is, we're looking at the boomers as they cycle out of their midlife careers who have time, have resources, fortunately have good health, and have kind of a wanderlust and are saying, what am I going to do now with this time and with my education and with my experience and with my interests? And again, when a place like AmeriCorps or the Peace Corps offers programs targeted to boomers as they do, AmeriCorps, 10% of its slots are reserved for people over 55. The Peace Corps creating shorter term programs because maybe a boomer won't want to go to Africa for a year, but they might go for a month or 3 months. When those kinds of agencies in the government are ahead of the curve, we know that we need an option for Jewish engagement as well. And that's, again, one of the reasons that David and I began this work.
Do you think, do you think the time is right for a Jewish baby boomer Peace Corps?
Well, there are a few people looking at things like that. There's a group called Skilled Volunteers for Israel. That's Marla Gameron began that. She was actually a member of our little kitchen cabinet that helped us when we started. And she brings skilled volunteers and matches them to positions that use their experience in Israel for extended stays. So, and I know she's getting a lot of traction. So that's an example of it. But there are a number of ways that we can do extended. In fact, in our research, we found a surprising number of boomers, almost one in five, who were interested in intensive and immersive volunteer experiences, something that was more than just once a week, once a month type of thing. And so there's an interest out there. Can't say that everyone would follow through on it, but there is an interest. And if people do have some time because they're not working full-time any longer, and they want something in between that, and as I said earlier, whatever retirement ends up being, then it behooves us to capitalize on that opportunity, because if we don't, then another group will. Yeah, and there are many out there in the secular space that are doing this, which is terrific. But again, we need a voice that brings Jewish options and Jewish paths. It's analogous in a sense to what Birthright does with 20-somethings, which is at a point in life where you're making decisions about what to do with your resources and experience and what to do going forward in your life. So Birthright makes a lot of sense if it helps to put some Jewish options on the path ahead of Birthright attendees. The exact same thing is true for boomers. Not everybody accepts or recognizes it, but that's what we try to convey to people, that you need to look at boomers as similar to 20-somethings, because they too are going through a major change in their lives and figuring out what's next for them based on their experiences and resources. And for the boomers, there's all of those same decisions. There's a lot of the same behaviors, by the way. There's dating sites for boomers now. There's reports of STDs and drug use and other things
reports. We have people coming on actually on upcoming podcasts to speak directly to this explosion, especially in baby boomer issues around addiction. I've been involved in this. This is not theoretically. This is very, very serious concern.
And my point is that in many ways, there's a lot of parallels between younger people and boomers at this stage in their lives. And you overlay with that, if you're going to be a good program developer, you overlay not only the similarities, but then what's different? Well, what's different is some intimations of mortality. You get those aches and pains, you do your exercise, and you don't bounce back as quickly. So we need to also realize that for boomers, there might be some thinking about legacy. And that's one of the areas that we've been exploring, because people's legacy, what they're leaving to their kids and grandkids, becomes, I think, that much more important. That's not on the radar screen of a 20-something necessarily. but it is on the radar screen of a 50 or 60 something. And it's one of the areas that a few people are now looking at. And it's one of the reasons I think that the hottest area in boomer engagement now is grandparent related. And you and I have seen that because we were together at a conference not long ago, where the grandparent initiatives are where there's a lot of attention now. And it does seem like a catalyst for a good deal of boomer engagement. And I'm hopeful that it's also a catalyst for some investment in boomer programming, because that's been the test over the past 7, 8, 9 years David and I have been doing this. The level of investment, other than in key pockets around the country, has been kind of paltry.
So we're speaking with Stuart Himmelfarb, co-founder of B3, a senior fellow for faith-based civic engagement at the Wagner School of Public Service for New York University. Stuart, before we start winding down here, there's a word that keeps coming up in when I travel and the work that we do at Jewish Sacred Aging. I would bet you that it comes up in your work too, associated with our generation, and that is meaning. Meaning. Mm-hmm. How do you unpack that in the work of B3? Meaning.
Sure. You know, it's one of those words like community and membership and affiliation and institution that is really up for grabs right now. But here's one of the ways that David and I have approached this in our research. We did some research. It's very personal oriented, first off. And I think that's a really critical item, that we need space in our programs and in our marketing to really talk to individuals. In fact, we often talk about that people have an expectation of customization. That's one of the things technology has fostered. You asked earlier about that. And I think customization is one of those things. So people want there to be kind of a personal connection to their work, to their involvement, whether that's as a contributor to a nonprofit where you want to touch it yourself and be closer and more connected to it, or when you're volunteering and you want to do something much more hands-on rather than detached. So meaning is it's a very personal measurement, which makes it much more difficult for us. Collective and community-wide dimensions are sometimes easier for us to think about. But the way this landscape is structured right now, it is that level of personal meaning. So we need to be careful when we invite people in to a program, to a Shabbat service, to a volunteer activity. We need to find ways to connect with them personally. It's not enough to say hi and welcome. People need to be engaged on a more personal level, not as a way to say, do you want to become a member here? Or let me tell you about, you know, our next program, but to help understand what they're in, what they're motivated by, what they're looking for. Because as you engage, and it takes more time and more effort to do this, but that's the nature of the marketing and personal connection right now. But that search for meaning, which is definitely part of this boomer life stage, is something, as we said earlier, where we want to have some resources and opportunities available for boomers to pursue their own search for meaning. And we better be ready for that search to be a little bit different and a little bit atypical, idiosyncratic. There are lots of ways to be Jewish. Look, I don't want to be interpreted as saying there aren't people who aren't looking for the kind of traditional, small t traditional community and connection. I want to belong to a shul. I want a place to go to daven on Shabbat. There are still, you know, considerable numbers of Jews and boomers who are, and boomer Jews who are doing that. But I think we need to be ready for that increasingly large group propelled centrifugally outward by all of the things there are to do in our culture, that we need to find the hook for their personal search for meaning and how that search might connect with what it is we're doing or what we're involved in. By the way, Richard, meaning is a key word, but I also would say connection is another key word. And when David and I did some research about synagogue engagement of empty nesters, so that's a key boomer feature, we did find that in addition to connecting to clergy, which is a very important part of why people want to stay connected to synagogues, the next issues, by the way, leave aside financial issues, because there are people who leave synagogues because they've hit an economic bump in the road. But when we start to look a little bit deeper at what it is that keeps them in the synagogue, it's personal meaning, meaning it has value to me as a person, and being a, having a sense of being part of the congregational community. So if you take meaning and you combine it with connection, if those two things can work in tandem, then we're on to something. And when one or the other of those is weak, then people start to get shorter term in their involvement and will look elsewhere to something to which they feel more connected and which gives them more meaning. You're right. It's a key word.
Do you think that part of this search and what I call in my work, in my personal view, the theology of relationships, which and to me, in our generation, relationships are more important than anything. Do you think this is one of the motivating factors in this new type of search for different approaches to community or connection, that we're seeing this explosion around the country of pop-up shuls, organizations, institutions, very non-traditional, but really focused on a specific goal, encouraging connections in small groups rather than the large institution?
Yeah. I think all of those examples that you gave, and I, on a personal level, I'm a member of a pop-up startup, non-traditional synagogue community called Lab Shul here in New York. My experience in Lab Shul and my experience through B3 is that we need a very broad portfolio, to use that term, of opportunities for people to connect, because there are so many different ways that people want to spend their time and choose to connect to an organization. We just don't seem to have that drive to be a member. I mean, this goes all the way back to Bowling Alone and Robert Putnam. Mm-hmm. And the notion, in fact, in my title of faith-based civic engagement, you know, this is something that's part of the American landscape. We just don't have that drive to connect any longer. And as I said earlier, when you overlay the facilitation of these episodic engagements through technology and social media, then it makes it even more challenging. That's why the old models, tried and true and part of our childhood and early adulthood, why those models might just not be working anymore, and why we need, while we try to sustain those models, we also need to be experimenting. So the lab part of Lab Shul is really the operative term. We test new ideas, new ways to connect with people, new language, because some of the language we use is so dated that it'll turn people off at the starting gate. We need language that's contemporary and current and consistent with what people are hearing in the larger culture. Otherwise, we will appear to be yesterday's news, and we don't want that to happen.
Stuart, before we run out of time, in case someone wants to connect with B3 and get involved with WeWork, what's the website? What's the contact information?
Sure. I'd love, be happy to speak to anyone. Our website is b3platform.org. B as in boy, 3platform.org. And my email is stuarth, that's stuarth, at b3platform.org. And on the website, there is a way to just send us a note and a comment and question. We welcome that. We spend our time working with communities, with organizations within those communities, to try to better understand and capture this very interesting cohort and put it into that larger intergenerational context. So we're happy to talk with people.
So in conclusion, let me just ask you the softball question. This is a real easy one. Save it for the last, ninth inning. given all that you've talked about, the overview, the studies that you and Dr. Alcott have done, your work in communities, the change in culture, the dynamic change in baby boomers is again as a precursor or pathfinder for future generations. The easy question, of course, is, in your experience, are seminaries preparing our clergy for this new landscape?
Well, I can't say I'm an expert on all the rabbinical seminaries. I will say that there are increasing numbers of rabbis that we've crossed paths with who get this, who are looking at Jewish life and the various cohorts of adults in Jewish life and trying to look for new ways to do it. So that's actually not a softball, because ultimately we need to be sure that rabbis emerge from seminaries with an understanding of how to market, how to read consumer behavior. And I'm not likening this to buying detergent, but I am likening it to every other considered decision that people make. They use models, whether it's conscious or not, of priorities and ordering of different options of things to do with their life and with their resources and their money and time. And if we don't equip rabbis to understand how these things are changing, what words are losing their meaning and what words are gaining meaning, what behaviors are ascendant, the notion of tapas, if we don't do that, then the organizations, in particular the synagogues, that look to them for leadership won't get the latest version of what's needed, more relevant, meaningful leadership. The other thing is to ensure success is to insist that rabbis think about the personal nature of the search for meaning, that it doesn't just follow the rule books anymore. It is idiosyncratic and very personal. That puts a burden on the rabbi, but you know what? Burdens have always been placed on rabbis. The ones who are going to succeed are the ones who will find a way to respond to that challenge and find more people in their congregation that they can connect with in that way. Our research indicates that that'll strengthen their congregation. So
that's probably why we refer to it as a calling and not a job.
It is.
Stuart Himmelfarb, co-founder of B3, a senior fellow of faith-based civic engagement, the Wagner School of Public Service at NYU. Stuart, thank you very, very much for joining us here on today's edition of Seekers of Meaning. I wish you continued success. Keep in touch. And most of all, just stay healthy, okay? And thank you.
Take
care,
man.
Thank all of you for listening to today's edition of Seekers of Meaning, the podcast of Jewish Sacred Aging. Again, we welcome your comments to Rabbi Address at jewishsacredaging.com and invite you to visit our Jewish Sacred Aging Facebook page. These podcasts are recorded at the studios of Lubetkin Global Media here in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. And thanks to our producer, Steve Lubetkin. I'm your host, Rabbi Richard Address. Thank you for listening. We look forward to greeting you on the next edition of Seekers of Meaning, the podcast of Jewish Sacred Aging. Shalom.